The U.S. is not winning the war on terror, according to more than 80% of the country's leading foreign policy experts. We'll discuss this finding and more from the latest Terrorism Index this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's now 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, August the 22nd. The Terrorism Index is a nonpartisan survey of more than 100 foreign policy experts from the Center for American Progress and Foreign Policy. In this third survey, this third terrorism index, 100 of America's top foreign policy experts, Republicans and Democrats alike, were surveyed, and the majority see a world that is growing more dangerous, a national strategy in disrepair, and a war in Iraq that is alarmingly off course. We'll talk with a co-author of the Terrorism Index and welcome your questions and your opinions on the questions that the foreign policy experts were asked. Like, is the U.S. winning the war on terror? Is the surge working in Iraq? Would a troop withdrawal from Iraq lead to terrorist attacks here in the United States? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Brian Katula, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress and co-author of The Terrorism Index, a collaboration between the Center and Foreign Policy Magazine. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being here. So right off the bat, these top foreign policy experts were from all sides of the political spectrum?
Yes, we took great care to make sure that we were getting as representative of a sample of individuals who had worked in national security, who are professors on this, and it's a really good sample. We've got a couple of former secretaries of state and former CIA director, national security advisors, and we tried and succeeded in making it balanced to make sure that it wasn't skewed one way towards liberals or conservatives. And we painstakingly did that. And 80% of the experts we surveyed had served at some point in the U.S. government, with half of them in the executive branch. So this is a very distinguished group of individuals.
Yeah, and more than 80% of them agree that the U.S. is not winning the war on terror.
Yes, I think the top line results is that there's increasing pessimism among the nation's experts about the state of U.S. national security. 91% said that they think that the world has grown more dangerous, and as you said, 80% think that we're not winning the war on terror, and 8 in 10 think that a terrorist attack on the scale of 9/11 is likely to happen in the coming years. So it's a very negative overall result, and I think it leads to serious questions about where we're headed on our policies on these fronts.
It also leads to serious fears.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think they're very deep concerns. I mean, a lot of what is driving this from the survey is a deep concern about the war in Iraq, of course, because I think we see it on our headlines every day in the nightly news. But other interesting emerging challenges like Pakistan that some of the experts highlight. And it's very, you know, I think these are very difficult questions.
Yeah.
And here we are nearly 6 years after 9/11. And people are wondering how far and how much we've succeeded, and I think the answer is we've got a long way to go.
Yeah, tell us what the foreign policy experts had to say about Pakistan.
Well, in Pakistan, 53%, a majority, said that our policy, the U.S. policy, was having a negative impact on national security. And interestingly enough, the experts cited Pakistan as the country most likely to become a haven for al-Qaeda. But the really fascinating point here, I think, is that there's no consensus about what to do about Pakistan. We not only asked how are things going, we also asked questions about what should be done, not only on Pakistan, but Iraq and a whole host of other things. And there was no consensus at all. 28% of the experts said that uh, They would support putting pressure on President Musharraf in Pakistan to crack down on the extremists, while 22% said that we should just give more assistance and financial assistance. So it's clear, I think, much like the Bush administration, the expert community is quite divided on the complicated questions of what to do about Pakistan.
Yeah. Not so divided, though, when asked about how things were going in Iraq.
Yeah, it's fairly negative. I mean, we have 92% thinking that the war in Iraq has had a negative impact on U.S. national security. And there's really, what's interesting, there's no discernible, when you sort the data by conservative versus liberal versus moderate, there's really not that much of a difference statistically. So there's a consensus there.
And now you didn't necessarily say how is the surge going, but whether it had a negative impact?
Well, that was a separate question.
Yeah, okay.
The first question was 92, you know, asking, has it had an impact on the Iraq war on U.S. national security? And the vast majority said it's been negative. We asked also, you know, has the surge had a positive or negative impact on U.S. national security? And a majority said negative. And that's up from 31% 6 months ago when we did the previous survey. So overall, you know, besides a couple of issues related to the war on terror, the war in Iraq received the lowest grade. And I think, again, this is across all partisan affiliations. And I think this is another place where people are looking for different sorts of answers than we're getting from the Bush administration.
Yeah. Also asked, would a troop withdrawal from Iraq lead to terrorist attacks in the United States? And what did the experts say?
Well, this is interesting. I mean, because you hear from some of our political leaders, 9 in 10 did not believe that terrorist attacks would occur in the U.S. as a direct result of troop withdrawal. You know, this kind of flies in the face of, you know, the terrorists will follow us home.
Mm-hmm.
That said, majorities said that there would be some dangerous consequences for U.S. troop withdrawal from Iraq, that instability would spread beyond Iraq's borders, that Iran might step in, and a majority also thought that rogue militias would divide up the country. So it's not that there would be no negative consequences. It would be that nobody saw a direct relation between a terror attack at home and the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq.
Yeah. What was the next front, if there would be the spillover from the war in Iraq? What did the experts think would happen?
Well, the spillover, this was interesting because we were expecting something different, and 47% of them thought that the Jordan, which is neighbors Iraq to the west, would most likely experience spillover violence from the war in Iraq, followed by Saudi Arabia, 22%. And that, I thought, was pretty interesting, given that Saudi Arabia, which was home to a series of al-Qaeda attacks, including a 2003 bombing, and this, you know, many of the Saudi, many of the 9/11 attackers were actually from Saudi Arabia, 15 of 19. But most thought that Jordan would be most likely. And I think that's a very interesting and I think raises important points, given that Jordan is now host to close to 1 million Iraqi refugees at this point.
Yeah. Well, what else did we miss a question that you asked?
Well, there are many questions that we asked. We asked, in particular, overall, how are the U.S. agencies doing in handling this? And I thought this was really interesting. Even though many experts were negative about the policy approach on most fronts, the agencies got fairly high scores and even better scores than they did last time around, which to us implies that they don't see it as a fault of people who are serving in the military or in the intelligence agencies or in the diplomatic corps, that it was a fault of leadership in a sense, and maybe not even with just the Bush administration, but with Washington overall, not having a clear sense of what's the right strategy and policies to implement.
Yeah. What about what do the foreign policy experts say when it comes to Iran?
Well, with Iran, this is I think very interesting because you hear a lot of talk about Iran's nuclear program and what's the best way to go about doing it. And there's to address this challenge, there's very little support for a military approach to Iran. I think it was close to 10% who said that military action is the best way to deal with Iran. And a growing consensus of we need to actually sit down and talk to Iran about these issues and develop a more comprehensive policy towards Iran.
Yeah. So overall, your synopsis, the conclusion that you reach from this latest terrorism index.
Well, the conclusion is that we haven't progressed much beyond 9/11, that the threats are still out there, and in fact, the threats posed by global terrorist networks still exist. And the Iraq war is not helping matters. It may, in fact, be hurting matters. And that we have other fronts like Afghanistan and Pakistan that present real threats, and we don't have any clear approaches as yet to address those challenges.
Yeah. We're talking with Brian Katulis, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, co-author of The Terrorism Index, which is a collaboration between the Center for American Progress and Foreign Policy Magazine, in which more than 100 of the country's leading foreign policy experts were surveyed on a number of questions. 91% of these foreign policy experts agree that the world is becoming a more dangerous place for the United States, and 84% of the foreign policy experts say the United States is not winning the war on terror, among other things. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your questions and your thoughts on these questions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Hope you stay tuned. Ann Strainchamp's in for Kathleen Dunn after 9 o'clock, talking with Richard Harwood, who is founder and president of the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation, talking about who's more authentic, Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, McCain or Giuliani. Ann's guest will discuss the quality of authenticity as the public perceives it in politicians and will rank the current crop of presidential contenders after 9 o'clock. We're talking with Brian Katulis, who is Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, about the Terrorism Index, which is a semi-annual nonpartisan survey of foreign policy experts in which these leading experts were asked questions about the war on terror, the war in Iraq, and a number of other foreign policy questions. We're discussing the results of the Terrorism Index and welcoming your questions about this at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Does it surprise you or not that a vast majority of these foreign policy experts say that the world is becoming more dangerous for the United States, that a majority of these experts, 84% of them, say the United States is not winning the war on terror? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or emails at talk@wpr.org. We have an open line for you. Robert in Barrington is our first caller. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering if the survey asked any questions about the role of the media in raising public awareness about terrorism and whether or not the media is doing all that it can.
We didn't actually address that issue. We did talk about, we asked questions particularly about public diplomacy and what could be done about the U.S. image, but we didn't ask about the role of the media to these experts. No.
Yeah. So what do we do in light of these results, Brian Katulis?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to have a more substantive policy debate. I think we're heading into an election next year. And one interesting thing we did was we took some quotes from the leading presidential candidates on the left and the right, and then we contrasted it with what the experts had to say. And I think what we need to do is actually have a less of a rhetorical debate, one that tries to divide the country on partisan lines, and really more of a debate of the tough issues. Pakistan, Iraq, I mentioned those two as ones where there really are no easy answers. And I think it makes it very difficult, especially heading into an election, where these issues become politicized and one party tries to paint the other as either incompetent or weak on these issues. And I just don't think that serves the country very well. I think we need to have a fair discussion because I think this is an even-handed assessment that we need to do better to protect American security. and sometimes the political rhetoric just does not get below the surface level debate. And I think that's one thing we need to do.
Yeah. Well, and one of the quotes was from Senator John Edwards that Congress should correct its mistake and use its constitutional funding power to force an immediate withdrawal from Iraq. What do the foreign policy experts have to say about that?
80% oppose an immediate withdrawal from Iraq, and I think that makes sense. I mean, because it's almost impossible to immediately withdraw the troops. But that said, 7 in 10 think that we need to start drawing down our troop presence over the next 18 months. They felt like a year and a half timeline of redeploying the forces from Iraq was probably, I think it was the most favored option out of the ones that we tested. So that's, you know, another contrast, if I could highlight. We asked several questions on the Arab-Israeli peace process, and Senator Barack Obama, who said that we need to isolate Hamas, the Palestinian organization, 70% of the experts disagreed with that. They felt we should try to engage in some sort of way with this group. And again, this doesn't mean that the experts are right or wrong, but I think it's important to have that sort of discussion and debate about what's best for our country.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Robert? Oh, I guess he's gone. Julie in Appleton is our next caller. Hi, Julie. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, of those 100 experts, how many of those are actually in the administration, or if there were any that are in the administration?
The answer is that there are none that are currently in the administration. The administration would... basically, when you're serving in government, it's very difficult for you to go on the record in these types of surveys. But we do have people who served, say, in the first Bush administration, people who served in previous Republican administrations. We took great care to make sure that those individuals had their voices represented.
Okay, Julie?
Thank you.
All right, thanks very much. Tom in Waukesha. Hi, you're on the air.
I'm wondering, what criteria did you have to pick these experts? And I'll take my answer off the line. Thank you very much.
Yeah, very good. We developed actually a sample of more than 500 individuals who had either written or spoken about the issues of national security, terrorism, Iraq, and who were prominent in the debate. And then one of the rationales behind this is oftentimes you and I see in the newspaper a quote by one expert portraying one view on a particular matter. And we thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to try to combine all of these together? So we developed that sample of more than 500 individuals, and from that we asked individuals to take part. And then the response on these surveys, I mean, any survey that you do, particularly with the American public, there's low response rates because people hang up, they're too busy, and things like this. And that's why we took great care to make sure that our sample was representative, I think, of the nation as a whole on partisan lines, because national security really has some serious divisions when you look at the public opinion polls on policy questions related to national security. So that we developed it on the basis of who was most prominent around the country, who had served in government, and who had some experience.
Okay, well, now that we've talked about these the foreign policy experts who were surveyed for the third terrorism index, let's talk a little bit about the content of what they had to say and where we go from here. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. What do you think about these results, where more than 100 of America's top foreign policy experts are seeing a world that is growing more dangerous? They think it's a more dangerous place for the United States, 91%. They see a national security strategy that's in disrepair, and a war in Iraq that is alarmingly off course. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We'll talk more about what this means for the 2008 presidential candidates and the future of foreign policy in this country. And we welcome your questions for our guest, Brian Katulis, who is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and co-author of this third semi-annual terrorism index. Jeannie in Mount Horeb is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if he said that
the experts had, mostly of them had recommended a withdrawal from Iraq. How do you go about withdrawing from Iraq and maintaining some semblance of stability in the region?
Well, I think that's a very important question, and I think it's one that people here in Washington are dealing with and in the Bush administration, because we're reaching the point where our military is basically reaching its breaking point, and I think some commanders have recognized that some form of drawdown needs to begin by next spring. And that's why when we asked a whole series of questions, we asked, do you favor immediate withdrawal? That was the least favorable option of the one that was chosen. Most talked about a phased drawdown, and then they also favored options that talked about forcing more of international support to settle some of the disputes between Iraqis, because I think there's a recognition that a lot of the violence inside of Iraq is a vicious struggle for power, a civil war. And there was strong support, 88% supported some form of diplomacy along the lines of what James Baker and Lee Hamilton proposed in the bipartisan Iraq study group, as a way to mitigate or lessen the impact of the withdrawal of U.S. forces. Because if Iraqis are killing other Iraqis in power disputes, the best way perhaps is not to send more troops on the ground, but to see if there's a way to peacefully mediate those disputes. And I think that, you know, when you look at the results of the survey, very little support for a dramatic decrease and withdrawal of U.S. forces. More along the lines of a phased withdrawal or redeployment of forces, with some of those forces staying in the Persian Gulf region. That was part of the option, too. But the strongest option, again, was the favor of intensifying our diplomatic efforts to get Iraqis to settle their differences.
Yeah. Talk more about why these experts say the war in Iraq is off course.
Well, a big part of it, I think, comes from the continued levels of violence. And when we conducted this survey, it was earlier this summer, late spring, early summer. And I think that they were fundamentally looking at the situation on the ground and seeing not a substantial increase in the levels of stability. And then another factor, which I think is why they focus so much on diplomatic solutions to the conflict in Iraq, is strong tensions between Iraqi leaders, no consensus at all on their political agenda on how to actually stabilize their country in power-sharing agreements. And I think that's a big part of it. We saw a sharp increase in those who were saying that the war in Iraq simply was not going well and it wasn't benefiting American security.
Yeah, well, you certainly couldn't have asked the foreign policy experts about the the news of the day, where we saw Carl Levin yesterday and now President Bush today. Well, Carl Levin says that Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki needs to go. And now the President Bush is kind of, you know, taking a step away from him as well. Can you talk a little bit about the politics of Iraq?
Sure. I mean, this is one thing that I focus on, and I lived in the region for about 4 or 5 years and worked in Iraq in 2003 and 2004 for a little bit on projects. And I think, you know, this my own reaction, and I think many of the experts would agree with this, to these statements that we need to replace Maliki coming from American political leaders, I don't think that we have much business meddling in Iraqi politics at this stage. I don't think it's particularly helpful. I think this raises larger questions, because if not Maliki, then who is the bigger question? I don't see any other Iraqi leader at this point that garners the support of all of the different groups inside of Iraq. And rather than picking and choosing a leader, I think we need to think, take a step back and say what can be done by the U.S. and, more importantly, what can be done by countries in the region and the international community to help Iraqis get to a more functional political process that actually settles these disputes peacefully. I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last couple of days, two governors were killed in southern Iraq, mm-hmm. Implying, again, that there are these vicious struggles for power that aren't really being mediated by the political process. And I think Increasingly, Democrats, Republicans, and others are raising questions about not necessarily what do we do with the troops. I mean, that's a very important question. But what do we do to get Iraqis to agree with each other? Because it's their country, and ultimately they're going to have to step up and agree on these power-sharing deals.
Yeah. Would you agree that there has been some progress militarily with this surge that we're seeing now, but not the political progress that is desired?
Yeah, and I think, of course, if we have the best military in the world, and if you introduce more forces into any country in the world, any of our forces, will help increase stability to a certain extent. But the point of the surge, as President Bush argued it, and I think, you know, as people really want to get Iraq to take care of its own situation, the point of the surge was to try to give space to Iraqi political leaders to settle their differences. And that's not happening. And it's not resulting from this increased stability in certain neighborhoods and certain parts of the country. So I think, yes, there has been some greater stability, and that helps us. But it doesn't, in the long run, lead to a political consensus inside of Iraq, then I think we still are where we were in 2005.
Yeah.
And we really need to think through how do we help Iraqis take charge of their own destiny.
Yeah. So can you guess what General Petraeus is going to report in about a month?
Well, I think he's going to report what we just talked about, that there have been some tactical military successes, and we should be surprised if there weren't, because, again, we have the finest fighting force on the face of the earth, and our troops do a great job. But Ambassador Crocker, our ambassador to Iraq, I think will report, and he's already hinted that he's going to say, look, there's been absolutely no progress on revising the Constitution, on how to share the oil revenue and divide up the resources of the country among Iraq's political classes. And that should, I think, give a lot of Americans pause, especially since the Iraqi parliament, which is supposed to deal with this issue, took August off and took a vacation while our troops were over there trying to do a lot of this work. And I think we got to get to a stage where the Iraqis are doing for their own, and we're protecting our core interests.
Yeah. Dan in Wanakee, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Joe Biden seems to think that we need a three-state solution, and I was wondering your opinion on that and why.
Well, first, let me tell you what the experts said in their survey.
Mm-hmm.
Only 39% agreed with a three-state solution. 61% disagreed. And I believe that's a fair kind of reflection, because I think Joe Biden has a very interesting proposal, but there are a lot of practical considerations that I think make it difficult to implement what he's proposing. First of all, Iraqis, many of them are intermarried, particularly in Baghdad. Baghdad is a very mixed city, and it's hard to figure out what to do or what could be done to separate the different communities, Kurdish, Shiite, and Sunni. And the second thing is it's difficult for me to see how that would be implemented by the United States, because in some senses, the U.S. Diplomats that are out there have been trying to get Iraq's leaders to agree on anything, and some of it has been this decentralized federalist-type system that Joe Biden supports. And it's stuck. The political process is stuck. You've got Sunnis, you've got Shiite nationalists, and you've got secular nationalists who oppose dividing up the country. And you've got others, like the Kurdish forces in the north, who want autonomy. So the main point is I think it's very hard at this stage for any outside force or country like us or a senator like Joe Biden to settle these issues. I think the best that we can do is try to think through what's the best political process to help Iraqis make these decisions. Well, it's not our place to make those decisions for them.
Jack in Kenosha is with us now. Hi, Jack.
Good morning. Thank you for an interesting show, as always. I have a slightly more complicated question for you. It's been said that we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. How do we deal, both with politicians and the populace at large, with people? For instance, Lyndon Johnson was said to be an example of somebody who could not exit the Vietnam War because he didn't want to be the first president to lose. We have people in the country now who don't seem to accept any understanding of how our actions in the world have turned the world against us. And when you talk about losing the war over there, all that does is stimulate a macho response in the minds of many people, rather than what's the reality, what should we do, what's just, what's even possible. How do we deal with that in people? I don't know if I'm making it clear.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting question, and if I could focus the question a little bit on the Iraq War, because I think this is where it resonates the most, and it goes back to a point where I was saying that I think our political leaders, unfortunately, sometimes just pander in rhetoric and talk about these issues in ways of winning and losing. And when I look at the situation in Iraq, when a lot of experts look at the situation in Iraq, we don't see one of winning or losing. We see one of how do we actually advance our interests in a more conductive and constructive way. And we're not doing that. I mean, the conflict in Iraq, again, most of the attacks and most of the violence is intra-Iraqi. It's related to a vicious struggle for power. So it's hard for me to see how we win or lose someone else's civil war. And I think trying to get people to understand that there are still threats out there. We still have considerable power and resources, but there are better ways than what we've been doing right now to address those threats is the way to move on. And I think the problem, though, is you've got people in Washington on both sides of the aisle who staked out certain positions over the last couple of years. They voted for the war, they voted for this or that policy, and it's hard for them to turn on a dime and recognize that the world has fundamentally changed and our position is not all that much stronger if you listen to these experts. And I think that's where I think democracy comes in, where voices like you and others who have a different view need to make our leaders aware of your positions, either to get them to change their positions or to get new leaders here in Washington. And I think that's the brilliance of our system. And I think it works in the long run, but at some points I think it's frustrating to see how this debate on Iraq or on the war on terror, how difficult it is, because it is complicated, but how difficult it is to get people to change their views.
Jack, thanks very much for the call. We're talking with Brian Katulis, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress and co-author of The Terrorism Index, which is a survey of more than 100 of the country's leading foreign policy experts on a wide variety of foreign policy issues. Some of the findings from this third semi-annual report: a huge majority, 91% of these foreign policy experts believe the world is growing more dangerous for Americans and the United States. 83% believe the surge in Iraq has had a negative impact or no impact at all on the war in Iraq. Nearly 9 in 10 say they do not believe terrorist attacks would occur inside the United States as the result of a withdrawal from Iraq, yet almost 80% of the experts oppose an immediate withdrawal of U.S. forces in Iraq. We welcome your questions for our guest, maybe even your own answers to those questions, your opinions, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Talking about the past and future of America's foreign policy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Stay tuned. And Strain Champs in for Kathleen Dunn between 9 and 11. Talking about the quality of authenticity as the public perceives it in politicians, and with her guest ranking the current crop of presidential contenders. Talking with Brian Katulis, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress. He is co-author of The Terrorism Index. The Terrorism Index is a collaboration between the Center for American Progress and Foreign Policy Magazine. Our next caller is Fred in Duluth. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I'll make a comment and then take the response off the air. My confusion and my problem with the show and the discussion this morning is that we're talking about the results of a survey and a terrorism index, and then during the show, I think your guest and other callers have been talking about issues such as control of nuclear weapons with Iran, the situation in Pakistan, the war in Iraq, the strategy in Iraq, and I think that this survey and this morning's show has fallen short, just as the administration has fallen short, in terms of talking specifically about what is terrorism. Because until we have an understanding of that, it's impossible to have an intelligent discussion about what our policy should be in, quote-unquote, the war against terrorism. I mean, the 9/11 catastrophe resulted from 18 or 20 guys with box cutters who got aboard airplanes and flew them into buildings in New York City. Now, what does that have to do, definitionally and policy-wise, with, for example, dealing with Musharraf's situation in Pakistan? What does that have to do with the Iranian government's development of nuclear weapons?
You have a problem with the name of this survey, the Terrorism Index?
Well, we've characterized everything as terrorism here. Yeah. I mean, a very, very broad and ill-defined definition of terrorism, which then makes it very difficult, I think, to talk intelligently about what it is that we do about it. The administration would like to characterize our war, the war in Iraq, as the war against terror. You know, that has nothing to do, in my opinion, with it. It had to do with a change in foreign policy.
I get your point. What do you think of the results of the foreign policy experts and what they have to say about all these specific issues?
Well, the results that say, for example, that we are the world has become a more dangerous place, okay? And that is the result of a survey having to do with terrorism. Well, I think that the general public would say, well, my gosh, we need, when George Bush or the administrations or the Republicans in the upcoming elections say that the Republicans are tough on terror and the Democrats are soft, we lose the ability to talk intelligently about what it is that is really going on. Yeah. I mean, the war in Iraq, and then I'll stop, the war in Iraq represents a departure in terms of our foreign policy where the government made a decision that we will no longer have deterrence to affect the control of nuclear weapons. We will change our policy, and we will go in and change foreign governments in an effort to deter the development of nuclear weapons. Now, that is dramatically different as a policy decision than is how do we fight networks of terrorists who want to get on board airlines with box cutters and fly them into tall buildings.
Mm-hmm. Brian Cotulis?
I think the caller makes a very fair point, particularly on the Iraq war front, because we hear from President Bush, he gave a speech about a month or so ago, where he used the word al-Qaeda, I think, more than 90 times when talking about the challenge in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk to our intelligence professionals and those who work in Iraq and are dealing with this tough issue, they recognize that the violence in Iraq, no more than 10 or 15% of it is related to terror groups that are affiliated with this al-Qaeda network. And I think it's a very important point that he makes. I would push back a little bit on his question about Musharraf and Pakistan in particular, because this seems to be the place in northwestern Pakistan, an area called North Waziristan, where there seems to be very good intelligence that many of those who were behind the 9/11 attacks actually exist and live there and have lived quite peacefully and in comfort. And we really haven't had a clear policy approach to address that, because when you look at the terrorist attacks and the attempted attacks that took place, for instance, in Britain, many of them seem to have emanated from that part of the world and not Iraq. So I think the caller makes a fair point, though, that there has been a danger where you lump all of these issues together, particularly on Iraq. And that's not to say that there aren't, you know, terror groups inside of Iraq, but it is to say that most of that violence is between Iraqis, Shiites and Sunnis killing each other. Some of it's score settling, going back to the days of Saddam Hussein and before, and some of it is just a struggle for power. But there are, you know, I think the caller makes that fair point, that we need to be more precise. And our survey respondents recognize that. They give higher marks to the need to do things like crack down on financing networks for terrorist organizations. And they give lower marks, for instance, to conventional military solutions, like invading and bombing countries to address this threat. And I think that's where much of the country is going in terms of the expert community. And I hope that's where our political leaders go, too.
Thanks, Fred, for the call. Scott in La Crosse, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning to you both. Actually, my call rather dovetails with the previous caller in that my question, anybody who has ever been surveyed about anything knows that the way the questions are formulated can have a huge impact on what the answers are, and sometimes that has its own hidden agenda. So if you don't mind, and I'm not asking you for a huge detailed description here, but could you talk a little about the modality of your survey, and you know how open-ended the questions are, the participants were given limited choices.
It's kind of boring, but the wording of the question.
Well, really, really quickly, I mean, first you can go online at AmericanProgress.org, our website, to see the full wording and how we worded each of the questions. Some of them were closed-ended because it's very difficult, I think, sometimes to aggregate answers when it's just simply open-ended. But we do have a number of open-ended questions, particularly when it comes to what to do next. When it comes to ranking, we do things like 0 to 10, how well are we doing on this policy or that agency, with 10 being excellent and 0 being awful. And I think in the aggregate, we tried to make the questions as neutral as possible to yield what we thought would be useful results to help people assess or to help think about where does the expert community think we are in the war on terror and other national security questions.
Thank you, Scott, for the call. Jeff in Winneconne. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Great. Pat Boone said recently that they're making a 4- or 8-lane highway going from Mexico through California to Canada. And the way our borders are right now, there's no way that we're going to...
That sounds like a different issue, Jeff.
There's no way that we're going to correct terrorism. There's more terrorism. Let me get to my point, okay?
Well, I'm not stopping you. Go ahead, Jeff.
All right. There's more terrorism in New York. When was the last time you were in Harlem at night? There's more terrorism in San Diego. I'm afraid to walk down a lot of streets at night in San Diego. We need to address our problems first and then worry about other countries. Right now, the Bush administration, all they're doing is trying to clear out the foreign Middle East so they can get people to work for a dollar a day. I'm not working for a dollar a day.
I so worry about problems at home and not this foreign policy stuff. You want to just react to that, Brian Katulis?
Yeah, I think, in the 21st century, I understand his instinct that we do want to take care of problems here in our community and things like this. But in the 21st century, in this age of globalization and international travel, it's hard to stick our heads in the sand and just say, well, the problem's over there. Really, we can't really pay attention to them. I think there was some instinct to do that before World War II when Hitler was around. And, this is not to say, and I'm not in favor of going over to other countries and invading willy-nilly and doing this and that. But I think we do have an interest to help others stabilize their communities and their countries. And I think we're a great nation, and we've done that before, particularly after World War II in Europe and other places. And that benefited us. That benefited the people over there. And I would argue it's made our lives a little bit better, too, because we've got partners and allies around the world. And we can't just simply stick our head in the sands anymore and just say, well, those problems over there won't impact us.
By the way, Jeff, you might want to be listening tomorrow. We might have a program on the rumors regarding the NAFTA superhighway and the North American Union talk. Maybe tomorrow. Matt in St. Paul, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. A very interesting program. I appreciate you taking my call. One thing that I don't think I've heard addressed yet is that I think this whole war on terrorism thing, basically the Bush administration is carrying water for the large multinational oil corporations. Wants to protect their profits, make Iraq a profitable venture for the multinationals, which doesn't really help the American people much. And that's part of why the Iraqi, I think, and I've read this analysis, why the Iraqi politicians can't agree on the oil distribution law, because it gives away basically so much of the rights to the oil to the multinationals. which then won't benefit the Iraqi people either.
Yeah, anything on that in the survey, Brian Katulis?
There's no question on that in the survey, but in some of the other policy work that we do, I would just say that I think there's a lot of conspiracy theory about what's really going on with the oil law in Iraq. And I think the bigger problem is, again, Iraqi leaders just don't agree on how to divide up the oil money themselves. You have Sunni leaders coming to conferences hosted by the United Nations saying that we are still 44% of this population, when, you know, most measures say that it's less than 20%. And they're saying that because they want 44% of the oil, you know, according to the draft oil law. So there are these disputes, and, you know, you talk about these production-sharing agreements that are written into the law. Many Iraqi leaders say recognize that we need the assistance of outside firms to help rebuild the capacity, that they can't do that themselves. And when you look at the text of the Constitution, the Iraqi Constitution, it says that these revenues and these resources are owned by the Iraqi people. So I think there's a lot of misinformation. I've been skeptical of certainly we wouldn't be in the Middle East with so many military forces if they just simply exported peanuts. I think we definitely do have some sort of interest there. But the notions of control and that certain groups are profiting from it, I've been a little bit more skeptical because I think it just hasn't served our country's interests to have so many of our young men and women spill blood over there, to have as an end result the price of oil doubling and tripling under George Bush's watch, and the production of oil in Iraq actually going down.
Yeah. So in our final moments here, your hope as to what this terrorism index, how this will influence our foreign policy and the presidential election?
Well, I hope it's a wake-up call and a recognition that conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, that there's serious concerns about how we're conducting our policies, not only in Iraq, but on other fronts, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and that we can do better, that we actually have quite capable people at our government bureaucracies and in the military and other things who want to serve, but they, in order for them to serve most effectively, they need the right sorts of strategies and policies. And I hope this survey serves as a wake-up call to those people who will be making decisions about what to do next.
And you said you have the survey posted on your website?
Yes, you could find it at www.americanprogress.org.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Great. Thanks, Joy.
Brian Katulis, Senior Fellow at the Center for American Progress, co-author of The Terrorism Index, which is a collaboration between the Center and Foreign Policy Magazine. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, please call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444, 1-800-747-7444. You can also listen to all of our talk shows. They're archived on our website, wpr.org. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production. And as always, thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.